It takes a certain graph for the area, I think, and for this type of farming and this type of lifestyle. It's not just farming. You know, it's kind of rewarding to see that you're doing your bit for nature up here as well. That's a really nice addition to what you're doing here, that it's not just about the farm and production, it's about what you're doing up here as well.
So often, farmers with upland areas are told their land is marginal and unproductive. But hilly land is not just good land, it is full of life. In this podcast, we hear from Nia O'Malley, an upland farmer in County Galway. She tells us how she manages her land for cattle and nature. This is Grand Tips, a podcast from Farming for Nature, which brings you the best advice from Irish farmers to help you restore life back to the land. I'm Bridget Barry. Nia, you graze 60 hectares in the Slieveochtain Mountains in County Galway. Can you describe what your farm looks like for us?
Yeah, well, I suppose I'm up here in the Slieveochtains, and we have kind of a variety of land here. We'd have a lot of kind of blanket bog, open mountains, sort of dry, wet heat. And then there's kind of a mixture of farmland in there, sort of species rich and wet grassland. So the fields can vary. It's like kind of a mosaic of farmland here. You might have some very rush, very dense, very scrub kind of land, and then you'll have some nice open pasture with a scattering of rushes. And then it would sort of open up then into these beautiful species rich fields where you find a huge variety of different flowers, different plants, you know, your orchids, your devil's bit scabious, your cuckoo flower. All of these are just scattered around, and that's beautiful to walk through and see that.
I'd say it changes a lot as the seasons go on as well.
You do. And, you know, especially in the mountains, I think that's where you really notice it. You know, right now, the millennia grass, the purple moorgrass, is just this beautiful gold. You know, the other day my cows walked through it, they'd broken out and I was bringing them back home through the mountains. And it was like something off the prairies out in the Wild West, or I don't know, way out in the bush in Australia. It was just this beautiful gold carpet that they were just walking through. And yeah, and then in the, you know, different times, like in the autumn, then that's going to be just this beautiful purple carpet of heather, you know, kind of August time, that millennial grass, that will actually start to turn a slight purple color as well. And that's where it gets its name from, the purple moorgrass. So yeah, you know, in the mountains, you definitely get this huge variety of colors. And then in the grasslands, yeah, it varies as well. You do have a lot of scattering of millennial grass in some of the pastures as well. So you do get that sort of golden hue coming through as well. So
60 hectares to a lot of people may sound like a big farm, but you have quite a small herd on it. So what's the reality of farming 60 hectares up in the uplands?
Although it sounds like there's a lot of acreage there, it's in reality, it is for maybe 5-6 months of the summer. And then in the winter, there's very little feeding value in that land. And that, I suppose, is one of the main challenges of upland farming.
Do you sell cattle in the winter? Like, do you half your herd?
So I'm sort of trying different things out, but at the moment I'm keeping my young stock. I sell them on as beef boxes, as 2-year-old animals. And then the heifers I'll sell on as purebred, you know, weanling heifers. Some of them I'm keeping on as replacement cows, as a sort of improve the herd.
So typically when I think of mountains and farming in the mountains, I think of sheep, but you've chosen beef over sheep. Why is that?
So the Slieveochtains, it's more of a blanket bog type of a mountain. So when you go to other mountains, it's kind of it's much drier land. You look at Wicklow and the Dublin Mountains, it's a much drier mountain, where the Slieveochtains is quite a wet mountain, predominantly blanket bog. It's really not the most suitable for sheep. The other reason is that we have a lot of scrub. We've got a lot of rush, and the sheep will be quite selective grazers. They're always looking for the sweet grass, whereas the cows are, they're roughage eaters. So they'll get out there and they'll really, especially the likes of these Belt of Galloways.
You've chosen Belt of Galloways. Why is that?
Just for their hardiness. They come from the Highlands there in Scotland. They're a good, stocky, sturdy cow. They carry good weight Good fat death position. The fat is sort of through the muscles, opposed to sort of on the outer layer. So they have a good thick hairy coat. So they sort of have a double coat. So they have a nice sort of insulated inner layer and then a hairy, shaggy layer outside. So they're really suitable for the kind of the rough weather. And I like to winter out. It just suits me. So I kind of need an animal that's sort of maintenance, low maintenance, and can hardy it out. So I have sort of open 20, 30 acres of kind of winterage area, sort of rough grazing. And then there's a bit of woodland there so they can go in and shelter if they need to. And then I throw out a round bale when I need to.
Do they calf outside?
Yeah, that was another reason for getting them as well, because, you know, I work full time. So I really needed livestock that could just mind themselves. Mm. So they're brilliant that way. They literally just pop the calves out. They calve outside. They pop the calves out. The calves are up and running before you even know it. No, they're super, super easy animals. And that was one of the main reasons for getting them. And they're excellent mothers. They have this sort of, they're very tuned with their sort of natural behavior. So they're excellent mums. They're very protective. They're always looking out for them. Remember when I got my cows first, they were, it surprised me. Every time I'd walk into the fields, they would scatter. You couldn't find them. They're in under the trees, under the gorse, in under the scrub. Yeah, that natural instinct to protect themselves was so strong in them. But yeah, though I liked that about them. They're real survivors.
Have you seen your farm restoring much of its biodiversity since you started grazing?
Yeah, it's interesting. I had my neighbour here the other day and we were just chatting. So, you know, the hen harrier is around here during the summer months. And then in the winter months, the hen harrier would go off to more kind of like Loch Carrib, sort of, you know, let down out of the hills, more sort of in the lowlands and kind of around the lakes. And this is the first winter where the hen harrier stayed around. So it looks like he has a winter roost up here, which is a first. So we're absolutely delighted. But yeah, I was talking to my neighbor about it. We're just kind of wondering, you know, yes, there's definitely been a change in how we're all farming up here in the Slievatties. You just look around at the neighbours' fields, which were once just thick with rush. Yeah, the rush has a very dark green, so it's very easy to identify them from the distance. But you could just see thick rush. And now what you see, everyone's making a little bit of effort to tackle their rush and tackle their scrub, whether it's extra grazing or whether it's mowing and topping. Everyone's kind of really tackling the rush. So now you're getting you're getting this variety of structure within the field that allows for birds to nest, allows for little mice and shrew to hide. So there's a much better hunting ground for the harrier. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing him in the winter months now kind of hunting over our fields. You know, they swoop really low and they sort of quarter, you know, back and forth. And so they're quite unique in that sense, in that they hunt quite low and quite slow and quite close to the ground. And it's really nice to see that. And I think that's what we're seeing as a result of the change that we're seeing in the farming and in how we're managing our fields to improve things for the hen harrier. So that was so rewarding.
The hen harrier it's an indicator species of obviously of a healthy habitat. So what does it mean to you that you've actually created this habitat that the animals and the hen harrier is starting to come back? Therefore, a lot of other species are starting to come back.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, they are an indicator species. So if the hen harrier is in trouble, that means everything else below it is in trouble, whether it's the microorganisms in the soil, the insects, the birds, the little mice, you know, the frogs, the newts, everything. You know, it's really from the ground up. So when you start to see the hen harrier wintering out here, it kind of shows. We've started to see them come in the summer. That's, we have been seeing that, and that's been nice to see that, because that's kind of indicating to us that things are improving here, that we have more of a bird population. And now that we're seeing them in the winter, because the winter is always quite a hungry period here in the Slievatties, you know, it's predominantly blanket bog, as I was saying, and we have a huge conifer plantation in this area. So in terms of food supply for the birds, it's always quite limited, you know, in terms of your berries and your nuts and your seeds. So the fact that we're starting to see this, you know, people are planting a lot more hedgerows, there's a lot more hardwood going in over the years. So it really is indicating to us that, yes, the bird population must be improving here in the Slievatties, because we're now seeing the hen harrier population. And from the ground up, there's obviously an improvement, which I think is so rewarding. As a farmer, that's really rewarding, just to see him flying around in the winter months. That's a first. So we're thrilled with that.
So you and your neighbours are doing kind of actions in practical management for biodiversity. Why is it that there's been a change in the way people are managing their uplands?
We have a couple of years ago, the Hen Harrier Project was set up. I think it was 2018. And this was set up to work with farmers. So the Hen Harrier Project is led by Fergal Monaghan. They recognised the importance of farmers within these SPAs, these mountain areas, to hear their role in creating a better habitat for the likes, as again, not for the hen harrier, but a role in terms of developing habitats. Because what was happening was, you know, I suppose with everybody moving out of farming and moving out of the mountains into the lowlands, the mountains were being let go. And, you know, even the agricultural land up here was being let go. And, you know, people talk about rewilding and, you know, just letting the place go natural. Well, I think what you would have seen that up here, but it didn't go the picturesque way people imagine. It actually, everywhere it just got covered in millennia grass. And, you know, it's an invasive species in itself, in that it's quite a dominant species. And once it takes over, it sort of smothers out everything else. So it's smothering out the heathers. It sort of creates this monoculture of millennia grass and this very uniform structure. So in a natural mountain state, you're going to have high heathers, low mosses, some bog cottons, some sedges. So you're getting this really varied structure within the mountain landscape. And then if you look at the agricultural land, you're getting, you know, what was happening when the lands weren't being grazed is you were just getting a monoculture of rush. So just fields and fields of rush up to your waist. And if you were to actually pull apart the rush and look down at the soil, there was nothing. There was no life. There was no birds nesting. There was no mice. It was just thick, thick rush. And then, you know, the dead matter from, you know, old rush having rotted down, and there was just no life. Mm. And, you know, people talk about rewilding in this lovely, idealistic, dreamlike fashion, but it's not the case up here in the mountains. And grazing and farming is hugely important to graze off that millennial grass. You know, unfortunately, with the rush, you do have to mow it or top it, but then graze it off with livestock after that. Once that was brought in, that's when the landscape changed. And that's what the Hen Harrier Project recognised. They recognised the importance of farming in maintaining a habitat up here, and maintaining and bringing back a habitat, basically, because it was starting to regress into, you couldn't call it a wilderness, but into a monoculture of rush and millennia grass. So they recognised that, and they would start, we had a couple of workshops and training days, and they would give advice, and they would come out and inspect your farm, and they would grade your farm on the type of structure within the grass or within your fields. So they're encouraging us to graze off land, mow, top, strips, tree or land. So they were sort of guiding us on how our land, you know, could be improved. And in turn, that was creating brilliant hunting grounds for the hen harrier, or brilliant nesting grounds, or brilliant feeding grounds for the small animals. So yeah, through their help, their recognition, and then through their help and support, it's created this change in mindset with the farmers.
Nia, what do you feel are the biggest challenges for upland farmers?
Yeah, the biggest challenges. It's a different type of farming. It is challenging in terms of, you know, productivity. It's tough. You have a lot more outs. We were talking there about the, you know, the winter season in terms of grazing and grasslands. You know, we don't have that. You know, what we have during the winter is, you know, we'll have plenty of range and plenty of scrub for them to pick at, but it's not going to keep animals throughout the winter. So if you are wintering out, you are going to be supplementary feeding pretty much solid. Probably it could be easy as early as October, right through to April last year. So it's tough in that sense, is that you can't just set aside winter pasture and let the animals off. Mm-hmm. You pretty much are full-time supplementary feeding right through the winter. So it's tough in that sense. But it's about weighing that up, whether you house the animals, whether you have some winterage set aside, whether you juggle and make things that are set up for yourself so that it's low maintenance or as low maintenance as possible over the winter. And then in the summer, then it's very rewarding. Yeah, the summers are nice up here. You have plenty of grass. It's very easy. So yeah, you have the challenges of that you can't rely on grass as much as you would, say, in other farms down the lowlands. And that can be a huge challenge. It's tough. The winters are tough up here. You know, we're a couple of weeks behind everyone else. Yeah, while everyone else is out enjoying their daffodils, we're still up here in the depths of winter. And it's the same in the autumn and the other way around. So, you know, we're losing our leaves early enough. So yeah, it takes a certain mindset to be up here. You do, as you say, it's a little bit of a lonely life, but I think some people like that. It's nice up here. You know, people talked about this whole pandemic that we went through. For us guys up here, we didn't know any different. We all have of course, there's loads of neighbours around and everybody meets, but we're all here because we do love the uplands. We do love the hills. We're up here for what it is, as well as for the farm itself. So it takes a certain growth for the area, I think, and for this type of farming and this type of lifestyle. It's not just farming. You know, it's kind of rewarding to see that you're doing your bit for nature up here as well. Yeah, well, you see the hen harrier coming back like that. It does make you realize, yes, you're running a farm, you're producing livestock, you're selling your beef, you're making an income from that, but your farm is playing another role, and it's playing a role in habitat and biodiversity, and in terms of, you know, protecting those environments and maintaining those environments. And I think that's a really nice addition to what you're doing here, that it's not just about the farm and production, it's about what you're doing up here as well. And I think that's really special too.
Are you hopeful that governments in the future will kind of give more added value to farmers like you up in the uplands for what you're doing for biodiversity and for the biodiversity crisis?
I think so. And I think when you see the likes of the Hen Harrier project, maybe they were fighting their corner and trying to get their program launched and trying to, you know, maybe people thought they're just protecting one species, the hen harrier. Why is the hen harrier so important? And I think people have realized now that they really are broad, like they cover all areas. It's, you know, it's about the ponds, it's about the newts in the pond. You know, they're not just about protecting the harrier, they're protecting, as I was saying, from the ground up. So whatever improves biodiversity or habitat within your farm, that's a plus. They're there to support you. And I think the likes of these EIPs are getting a lot more recognition for the role they're playing, that it's basically using farmers to improve the environment. And I think that's getting a lot more notice and a lot more support, which is, I think, is crucial.
Like many upland farmers, you are working off-site full-time, and many work full-time or part-time off-site. But does the farm pay for itself?
Yeah, it does. It's I wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't. But there was a lot of outs in the first year because, you know, I'd moved back. My mum hadn't been farming here for 10 years. So when I moved back, I had a lot of work in terms of draining and fencing and just reclaiming the land, because it's like what I was saying there about this whole idea of rewilding. It went wilder than me, but in the wrong ways, in terms of scrub and millennia grass and rush. So I had a lot of work in terms of bringing that back. So I put a lot into the farm in that sense, just in terms of bringing it back. That's where the donkeys
your starting came in. Point. Yeah.
Yeah. So the donkeys are a livestock unit. So, you know, I was able to use them for the first couple of years. But now that I've got into the cows, now I actually have an economic livestock unit. So now it is paying for itself.
And then for anyone that has upland farms, I mean, what's your ideal vision of upland farming in Ireland?
The type of farming that happens up here, it's not a like-for-like situation compared to, say, here and even 10 miles down the road in sort of the lowlands of Woodford or Moyglass or Ballinakil or Kilbrack. It's a very, I think this whole way, you know, working with the likes of the Hen Harrier Project or the likes of the Burn Programme or the likes of these other EIPs, you know, up in Connemara, the Pearl Mussel Project, I think that's really important, is to recognise what farmers are doing for the environment and to work with them. So when they get the support like that from these EIPs, I think that's crucial. But it's not just farmers having a handout because we live in a disadvantaged area. I think it's to recognize the role they're playing in maintaining these habitats here. And I think that's that's quite a unique thing that we have up here in the upland. And I think to be part of that is pretty big. But I think to recognize farmers for what they're actually doing, they are protectors of the environment. And I think that's important to separate the two.
Nir Mali, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.